I don't know what Malik was doing prior to Katrina, although I know that he's a former Black Panther and either is or has run for mayor of New Orleans and has been an activist, but I don't know much about that. But I know now that his house is sort of no longer his house in a practical day-to-day sense. He's got 100 volunteers who, at some level, use his house many every day to process their ideas and implement their ideas and to organize in and cook and wash. And his garage and yard are now wall-to-wall warehouses with computers and tents and a distribution center. And overall, the house has become the nervous center of a burgeoning, if small, political and clinical and distribution and community organizing entity. Common Ground is largely made up of and sustained by youngish white people. But he's done what he could to keep a cadre of blacks integral to a social core around him. But in no way is there a color line in the funding or the backing of projects. In other words, whoever comes forward with a reasonable idea and needs money or sort of his stamp of approval or what have you, and if he likes the idea, it doesn't matter if you're black or white, you'll get your funding and you'll get your backing. And so let's talk about Common Ground. Common Ground started when Malik put out a call to activists anywhere to just come and help, because it was apparent that FEMA, Red Cross, and any of the state and federal agencies were not going to bother themselves with really feeding people and caring for people after Katrina. And if it was going to happen at all, it was simply going to be a volunteer effort, and he was already engaged in volunteering, starting with the prisoners who were left to die in the prisons. So Algiers, where his home is, and his home in particular, became the beginnings of a distribution center. They began distributing food, water, clothing, diapers, toothbrushes, Clorox for cleaning the mold in the houses that have been flooded, everything, even giving away computers, generators. And he began a fundraising effort asking for donations and is currently on speaking tours. So he spends about half his time fundraising as a speaker and half his time with sort of a hands-on leadership in the efforts in Common Ground right there in Algiers. But besides Algiers, Common Ground has spread out to other places. There are now distribution centers with warehousing in Houma, which is out in the Gulf on a peninsula that juts out from New Orleans, south end of the Gulf. And in the Ninth Ward, which is just across the river from Algiers, so if you go across that Gretna Bridge, or the Mississippi Bridge, they call it, you wind up in New Orleans proper, and the Ninth Ward is a section of that. But besides those warehousing and distribution centers, there's a substantial impromptu or ad hoc distribution going on. There's one fellow who's notable in this regard, who's now in jail. He was jailed for double parking. His name is Jimmy. Jimmy lives in New Orleans and simply knew where hot spots of need were and are. And so Jimmy, virtually every day, loads up a truck with whatever's needed, from orange juice and diapers, water, all the usual things, and heads out to distribute. Jimmy's also part of acquiring these things, and so some of these things will come from FEMA or Red Cross, or the things that are distributed, the water and food, will come from all over the place, including FEMA and Red Cross, but also from other helping agencies that sprang up in FEMA's absence. Organizations like SOS, which is Save Ourselves, Veterans for Peace, and various other organizations that simply sprang up in FEMA's absence and in the absence of a earnest effort to try to save and help the survivors of Katrina. But clearly the biggest effort in Common Ground's efforts is the clinic. Probably 40 or 50 clinicians, doctors, nurses, physical therapists, administrators, and various others at a clinic in Algiers, which is about 4 or 5 blocks from Malik's house. And the clinic daily services 100 to 250 people with influenza shots and other preemptive medicine to stem disease, and with emergency care and regular sort of street clinic work, you know, for just cuts and bruises and those things that a hospital would otherwise do. The people coming for this care, of course, are in the lowest socioeconomic status and have a very limited access to hospitals and medicine of any kind. And so the clinic represents a huge step forward in these people's lives in that there's a ready and free access to a very high quality of clinical care provided by Common Ground to the locals in Algiers. Another part of Common Ground's efforts is eviction resistance, and we'll talk a little about that later, but essentially there's as much as 1,000 or as many as 1,000 evictions being processed in the court in New Orleans per day. So there's the evictions amount to a third disaster to hit New Orleans, the poorest of New Orleans, first being the storm itself, and the second being the lack of a response to that storm, and the third being these evictions. Jeremy and Jinka and other people within Common Ground are heading up this eviction resistance to try to get the people who live both in Section 8 or HUD housing and people living also in privately owned rental situations to be able to stay in their homes in a very chaotic housing market, recalling that there's a lot of devastation of houses. The pressure on the remaining houses is tremendous, and landlords are upping the rents as a result. But we'll come back and talk about that a little more. Another effort that is part of Common Ground is police brutality resistance. And this involves training people to monitor the police as they make arrests or just go about their business. There's a high degree of what I think of as racism within the system, and that's of economics and the political system in all over the United States, but also in New Orleans. And that's reflected in the police force, so that blacks, when arrested, have a stunningly greater chance of winding up in jail, of being beaten or harassed, and simply a greater chance of being stopped to begin with. Another effort in Common Ground's catalog is tree cutting. And as you can imagine, many trees were knocked down in the area. And so people's houses are compromised by trees that have fallen on them, or their yards and sidewalks are inaccessible because there's a tree in the way. And Common Ground has a first-rate tree cutter. His services are provided free or at very low cost to anyone who needs them. We have a clothing distribution center, which I helped to build. I built the racks and the shelves, and a massive amount, I would say, you know, maybe 1,500 garments became the sort of first installment of clothes in the clothing distribution center. And a house was donated for that purpose right in Algiers, and people come every day and get clothing for free. It's high quality clothing. I don't even know where it came from. I just built the shelves and was so busy just being a carpenter and doing that part of it that I often don't know how subsystems work. Like, where did these clothes come from? Why are they of a peculiarly high quality? But there they are, and they're hung up and ready for distribution. Another aspect to Common Ground's outreach is prison watch. Because of the high incidence of arrest and incarceration of particularly blacks in New Orleans, several people within Common Ground will go to prisons and simply interview people as they come out, as they're released after their incarceration, and try to document what their experience has been and what they were arrested for and how they were treated within the prison. Another effort is Common Ground Radio, which is about 2 weeks ago was shut down by the FCC, but had broadcast for the month and a half prior to that. Common Ground Radio was something that everybody had access to. So if you felt compelled, or you had experience, or you didn't have experience, you just had ideas, you could sit down at the microphone in the console and broadcast whatever it was that you felt was important. That could be music, or it could be an interview, or your own ideas, or what have you. So it was very democratic and open media collaborative there at Common Ground. And everybody who wanted to got a shot at the microphone. Or one other notable effort at Common Ground is their expansion into the Ninth Ward. For those of you who don't know, the Ninth Ward, as well as the 7th Ward in St. Barnabas Parish, were the hardest hit areas in New Orleans, in that they took the brunt of the flood that resulted from the breaking of the levee. The 9th Ward also took a second flood that was propagated on them by the powers that be when the wealthier areas in New Orleans were pumped into the 9th Ward when it was already flooded. The effort in the 9th Ward is not so different from the effort in occupied areas of Palestine, in as much as there's a question, more than a question, there's roadblocks for the residents of the 9th Ward as they try to return. There's martial law, checkpoints, regular convoys of military, police, that make arrests of people returning to their homes, that prevent people entirely from getting to their homes, particularly in the lower 9th Ward. And besides the intimidation of the security people down there, the homes in the 9th Ward have been flooded and stayed wet over a long period of time. And even if they're stable, which most of them are in terms of their structure, the couches are saturated with flood water, and the walls are saturated, and so there's a great deal of cleanup that must go on. And that's been, for the most part, successfully prevented by the powers that be. So Common Ground is taking the role of trying to invite people back to their communities and their residences in the 9th Ward and give material aid in the form of help cleaning up, re-roofing, food and medicine, and just general camaraderie and a sense of solidarity with the people of the 9th Ward. And this effort's headed up by a fellow named Brandon. And the effort in the 9th Ward is set to sort of supplant and take over the effort in Algiers. Though Algiers has been the focal point of Common Ground's efforts, there'll be a shift to the 9th Ward where the need is greatest. Although I think the distribution center and the clinic, all of those parts of Common Ground that have been there in Algiers will remain. The bulk of it will be shifted to the 9th Ward where the need is much greater. Another effort that is particular to Malik's vision for Common Ground is to institute a caravan. And on Thanksgiving Day, 300 people, I'm told, 300 people returned to the 9th Ward and saw their homes again, many for the first time since they were evacuated after Katrina. Malik calls this a caravan. He hopes that there'll be a continuous efforts at caravans, bringing the bulk of the community back to reinstitute the indigenous community of New Orleans and to reclaim the land they left when the storm hit. Malik also proposes that there be a carpentry school, and that the reconstruction of New Orleans, but certainly of the 9th Ward and Algiers and other places, take place with lots of the community members and residents of 9th Ward or Algiers or other places in New Orleans taking part in the reconstruction and creating a employment situation unique for decades to the area, where there really are jobs and there's really a sense of mutual support and grassroots organizing, as well as fixing of houses. As I said before, my experience was primarily with my tool belt on. I was a carpenter and building things. But at night, after I was done with carpentry and dark, I would just talk to other volunteers doing other things. One of the other volunteers is named John. I don't even know John's last name, but we talked many nights. And John had taken on prison watch as his activity. So John would attempt to interview prisoners as they were released from what was called Prison Greyhound. The security people had taken over the Greyhound station and made a prison of it. John was not welcomed by the prison staff and would have to hide somewhat and try to catch prisoners as they left, but without being seen by the staff so he could keep from being hassled by them. He was successful day after day. When the staff knew that there were prison watch people outside, they wouldn't release a prisoner until later, after they expected those people to have gone. Sometimes later meant 2 a.m. But John's interviews with these prisoners provide a backdrop to what security looks like and how the justice system or injustice system perform in New Orleans. One of the common experiences of all the prisoners is that all of them were brought into Prison Greyhound has since been shut down, and the prisoners are now shifted to the old parish prison. But a common experience of all the prisoners in Prison Greyhound was that they'd spend between 2 and 11 days in a cell with no beds, so they were forced to sleep on the concrete. Most were denied food for some period of time, some for as long as 2 days. One of them that John interviewed had been denied water for 2 days. All of the people in Prison Greyhound were there on misdemeanor charges, which might be breaking an entry, which in fact was yelling through the mail slot of his own house. So a man going to visit his house in the Ninth Ward, finding the house locked when he got there, and he believing his wife to be inside the house, having preceded him into the house, is yelling through the mail slot in the door. And this is perceived by the security people as breaking and entering, and he's arrested and thrown in jail. Another experience of all the prisoners is that they get no phone call and no recourse to lawyers. The same experience was had by men and women, so that there didn't seem to be a gender breakdown in this ill treatment of prisoners. About half of the prisoners had been picked up in their own neighborhoods, which were under martial law. So this is the ninth, the lower ninth, and seventh ward of New Orleans. Martial law means that you cannot travel in your own neighborhood without ID on you, and there's a curfew, so you can only walk maybe between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Martial law can also mean you may not go to your house. You may not go to even your neighborhood, and they're simply blocked with roadblocks, much like in Iraq. So people traveling, black people particularly, traveling to go to try to recover their goods or check on their homes or re-inhabit their homes are highly subject to arrest. So half of the people in Prison Greyhound were nothing more than people trying to get back to their home. Other arrests were propagated on these people when they pass the checkpoint and show their ID and leave their ID at the checkpoint, and then are arrested as they go to their home and have forgotten their ID, and they're arrested for traveling in a martial law zone without an ID, thrown in prison for that charge. The overall effort of security seems to be to prevent the re-inhabitation of the homes and the communities of the Ninth Ward. Another experience of one of the interviewees that John talked to was that he had had his jaw broken in prison, and this was the man who was yelling through the mail slot of his own front door and arrested for breaking and entering. His jaw was broken in prison. He got no medical care. The interview that John did with him was difficult because it was difficult for the man to talk, and he was also described having difficulty eating. If you care to find out about what the look of evictions is and the extent of evictions in New Orleans is, you can go to a website, which is www.no-heat.org. Go to the links section on the lower left part of the page, click on the links, at the times I've been there, the only link is to Jeremy's weblog. And Jeremy Prickett is an eviction resistance coordinator at Common Ground, and he keeps pretty much a daily weblog, and his weblogs are a good insight into both the nature of the evictions and extent of these evictions and his own perception of it. Each day, Jeremy and others, Jinka is another eviction resistor, who go out and meet with people whose furniture has been thrown out onto the lawn of the project or of the apartments, and who are sitting in a parking lot with no place else to go. Many have had their doors and windows closed with iron grates bolted through the wall by Eviction Services Corporation. Another form that these evictions take is harassment of apartment and project dwellers. Police come and visit at 2 o'clock in the morning, or work begins at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sense of intimidation and noise can overwhelm some people and just drive them out of their homes. One of the engines, the economic engines behind the evictions, is that FEMA, rather than giving vouchers to people who need the money for rent and to just maintain themselves, has given money to the landlords for remodeling. And the landlords' calculations are simple enough. They need these people out of there, the current residents, out of the buildings for two reasons. One is it's a lot easier to remodel a building with nobody in it. And the other reason is that after the remodeling, the landlord will be able to double or triple the rent. And so that the current crop of residents of his or her building aren't going to be able to pay the new rent anyway. And so throwing them out becomes a necessity. The police and the courts and the landlords seem to be working in conjunction with one another to produce these evictions. There are 1,000 evictions a day being processed in the courts. Many of the evictions happen without the courts and are simply illegal processes. For instance, Mayor Nagin had declared a moratorium on evictions before October 27th. Evictions took place anyway, and often evictees were told that they had to leave because the building is uninhabitable, when maybe only a small portion of that building had become uninhabitable, but the landlord wanted everybody out so that he could use this FEMA money to remodel the building and raise the rents. The beginning, as far as I can tell, of the eviction process happened a week after Katrina, and it happened at a place called the Fisher Projects. Three-quarters of the Fisher Projects had been torn down prior to Katrina, but the remaining building was a very stoutly built building and withstood the storm well. But a week after Katrina, the security forces, particularly the ATF, which is Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the same people that brought you the Waco disaster in Texas a few years back, surrounded the building, believing it to be a hub of looting. But the normal process for convicting someone of looting would be to arrest that person you believe is looting, and then have a trial. If they're found guilty, then incarcerate them. But this was a different process. ATF surrounded the building, claimed that they got gunfire from the building, and began shooting at the residents of the building, killing one man in the process. The body of the man killed was then left on the premises while everyone else in the building was evicted. Many of the people returning the building were reminded that they were not any longer welcome in their home by the body left there to rot in the Louisiana sun. This was the beginning of the process of evictions. The process is often sudden and brutal, but not as brutal as this Fisher Project. There are many components of the security presence in New Orleans. Governor Blanco gave many elements of the security presence shoot-to-kill orders after the media frenzy happened as regards looting. So the security people are made up of one or more of these elements, and there's a new police force, to my knowledge, which is called ICE, which stands for Immigration Customs Enforcement. The ICE police follow the regular police, the Algiers police force or the Gretna police force, when they go out on particularly serious matters, you know, or even not serious matters. When they come to visit common ground, for instance, there's 2 to 4 police cars, and in the second half of this police presence to visit common ground, these immigration and customs enforcement police are in the cars to the rear. And they don't usually do anything but get out of the car and watch the local police as they question, arrest, or apprehend the residents. Other police forces are Blackwater, which is a mercenary corporate army that claims to only do security, but in fact is doing fighting in Iraq, and was brought to New Orleans to provide a beefed-up security presence in New Orleans. One of Blackwater's duties is to guard the, or to provide security within the camp that FEMA has set up for itself in Algiers. So as you move around in the camp, you'll see men in brown shirts with Blackwater security printed on the shirt. Outside of that camp, you'll find Blackwater people with t-shirts on, and in the back of the t-shirt, it says U.S. Marshal. Many security entities have been deputized by the mayor and by the governor of Louisiana, the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of Louisiana, as U.S. Marshals, and Blackwater is one of those groups. They now have police duties and the capability to arrest, and so they can and do patrol neighborhoods in a situation reminiscent of Iraq or Palestine, where different kinds of security entities, other than the local police, the normal security presence, have these police powers and exercise them on the streets of New Orleans, particularly in the black areas. There's also National Guard. Many of the vigilante, the white supremacist groups, were also deputized by the governor, provided their own kind of security. And it's alleged that these supremacists with U.S. Marshal t-shirts on were engaged in shooting looters and in harassing blacks as they attempted to escape the floods and the storm in the wake of Katrina. And there's also, of course, State Patrol. If you do a Google search on your computer or online and enter "shoot to kill Blanco" or "shoot to kill Governor Blank," you'll find the news stories of governors having given these shoot to kill orders to the National Guard.